What is going on, everyone, and welcome to the Slaw Sports Show. I'm your host, as always, Cole Noble, a.k.a. Slaw, here on this Friday now at noon, right on the dot, here joining us live on YouTube at the Slaw Sports Show. We're continuing on with our prospect breakdowns leading up to the NFL draft. Let's see. I'm going to try to do the math, and while I try to do the math here, we're going to bring in Matt Laguzza, because this was a fun game last time. So the 27th,
13 days
away, less than 2 weeks away from the start of the NFL draft. An exciting time. And Matt, today we're talking about the big boys. Talk about exciting. My most favorite position to break down and talk about, because not everybody does it. And it's very rare to come in here and be able to talk about these guys, have film on these guys, and actually break these prospects down on an in-depth level, and I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah, and there's tons of talent both on the inside and outside of the offensive line. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of guys to talk about. I'm excited, and, you know, it's a good class.
All right, so this offensive line class, it started out pretty shaky, but the more we have gotten into it, the more talent that is presenting themselves as top-tier guys. And it's a position where year in and year out in the NFL draft, when one goes, they all start going. And it definitely seems like that's going to be the case this year. I mean, if you talk about, you know, the draft board looking in to April 27th in the first round, 10 of the top 12 guys probably aren't even offensive linemen.
Yeah.
And when you actually get to that first lineman, when that first domino falls, I expect to see a big run on these offensive tackles, especially in the first round, and I think a lot more go in the first round than many are projecting right now in their mock drafts.
Yeah, I mean, you and I, we're going to be talking about seven guys here today, just in particular. We could see more than those seven guys go in this first round. And the thing is, we might not see a single one of them in the top 10. So that is a lot of offensive linemen. Well, that is one, a lot for one position in 11 picks. Or, sorry, 21 picks to go. So we could see easily about half of the remaining picks after the top 10 be offensive linemen, depending on how it goes. Because you can always use one. Doesn't matter. There's a lot of versatile guys in here as well. A lot of guys that can play both interior and on the tackle position. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, and there's even guys that I think are late first round, you know, more likely early second round guys who can play center, can also play guard. There's someone here that can play center, guard, and tackle.
Yep.
A lot of versatile guys, which I like my multi-positional versatility on the offensive line. I know it was a big thing last year leading up to the draft, during the draft show, that I got a lot of fun remarks about, that those are the type of prospects that I like and what I look for in my offensive line. And, you know, in my offensive line prospects for potential teams, because there's a lot that teams can do with their offense. If you have a guy who can play multiple positions at a position that a lot of players get hurt at, and you need five really good ones if you want to be a really good football team. So having a player that can play
three, maybe four
different positions on the offensive line is really key in the NFL, and we're seeing a lot more of these players in college play different positions, get more better equipped to be a versatile guy in the NFL. So there's definitely some of those guys in this year's class. When we talk about the top of the board, though, there's one guy in particular who's strictly a tackle, and there's one guy who many think fits better as a guard. Between Paris Johnson Jr. out of Ohio State and Peter Skoronski, which one do you like as being the first one to come off the board?
Personally, I think Paris Johnson will be the first off the board. I think both of them have a very good chance of being the first one off. Peter Skoronski, obviously, as you said, most people think he fits better as a guard, but his ability to also play that tackle position and really being his main position throughout college, that might give him the edge up. But I think Paris Johnson, his size compared with the skill that he has, I think it just sets up to be a starting NFL left tackle, a Pro Bowl left tackle in the NFL for years to come if you can unlock that potential. So personally, I think the play would be to go to Paris Johnson just because he is more of the safer option and the guy that I think can impact a team as a top 10 level pick. But, you know, it is what it is, and we'll see what happens. But if you're comparing the two, I think Paris Johnson is the better prospect.
Yeah, and I think a lot of, you know, if you are picking in the top 10 or right on the edge of the top 10, you're going to want an offensive lineman, I think you go with the guy who's a safer pick. Not saying that Skoronski isn't the safer one, but it's just the concern of where you're going to put him.
Yep.
That's enticing, but I think for the teams that want a an offensive lineman or want a tackle early in the draft, like they're, you know, traditionally go, Paris Johnson would be the guy. That would be the first one off the
board. You know what you're getting with Paris Johnson. Yes. You are getting a big, strong left tackle that can go out there and ball out for you. Skronsky, he's an offensive tackle. That's what he's done. But there are concerns. Playing him on the offensive guard, when you're drafting in the top 10 in particular, you want to know what you're getting. And with Peter Skronsky, you know, yes, you might think that, you know, guard is probably the best place for him. But for all you know, he might have to play tackle. You know, there's just too many question marks, despite his skill. His skill is amazing, but there are too many question marks for him to be the first off the board, in my opinion.
All right, so let's start off and, you know, start breaking down Paris Johnson first. You know, the player that we both think will be the first one off the board at this position. And Paris Johnson had a pretty remarkable tape at Ohio State, playing on the left side. And studying Ohio State's offensive line was fun because you had Paris Johnson on the left, you had DeJuan Jones on the right. Yeah. And we're going to talk about both prospects today and, you know, the film on both. But a very experienced guy and a very athletic guy. We didn't get to see that, though. We didn't see him really do much at the combine. We didn't really get to see him do much at his pro day either at Ohio State. He's the guy who's sticking to his tape.
Yep.
And the tape showcased that this guy is an athletic guy. Played guard on the right side in 2021, kicked over to left tackle in 2022. So he's still raw at the position, but he played it like a very experienced guy then. Yeah, considering he didn't have that many, you know, reps going into it before this year. But once he got over at the left tackle position this year, I thought he had a tremendous season at the position.
Yeah, I mean, actually, that's something that most people forget about. He was an offensive guard. He has the ability to play inside if you need him to. He's going into the NFL as a left tackle. That's what he's going to be. You're drafting him as a left tackle. But if someone gets hurt and you've got someone that can't play guard, only play tackle, he does have the ability to play inside if you really need him to, and I think that's something that's very undervalued about him. But no, he's an extremely athletic player. His tape shows it all. I mean, he's extremely strong. He does have a little bit of an issue with power rushes. He mm-hmm. does get kind of set off base a little bit, and I'm sure we'll see that a little bit in the film. But, I mean, overall, I think he's a very good player, and the key is just going to be developing him. Get him a little bit more used to the position, ease him in, and then get him going. Because, you know, a few more reps, a few months of training camp, that could really get him to the place that he needs to be a starting left tackle in the NFL.
Yeah, I think what a lot of it is with Paris Johnson, there's a lot to like about. For one, has to be the size. I mean, 6'6", 313,
oh, yeah.
Great size for a left tackle. 36-inch arm length is pretty solid as well, again, which is very considerable when you're comparing the two with him and Skronsky. But the other thing, you know, athleticism, coordination, how he developed, you know, as a left tackle this year, had a lot of people enticed by him. I think his overall technique will need improvement,
yep.
You know, but getting paired with a good offensive line coach, you know, at the top of the board will help that for him.
That's also something that's just going to come. I mean, he's new to the position, and you've got to expect that. But you're drafting him because of the potential that he has there, not because of what he is right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think he is. And he has all the potential in the world to be that top guy.
All right, so let's get to the film and start breaking down some of the tape that we saw from Paris Johnson. So this first game is against Georgia in the college football playoffs. So big competition here. Tons of edge rushers they had. It's not the best tape that we're going to see, you know, against a Georgia edge rusher. There's not really some big ones where he's, you know, against Nolan Smith per se. We have some tape later with some interior guys against Georgia's defense where they're going, you know, head-to-head with Jalen Carter,
yep.
Where that's a lot better of a head-to-head matchup, but still a top defense where on the left side, he pretty much was able to work on an island and protect CJ Stroud in a big game and hold his own against some, again, still top-caliber defense edge rushers on that defense.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's good. I mean, his technique is very good for someone that has just transitioned from the interior part of the offensive line. And I think watching the tape and seeing what he can do and the amount of pressure that he really didn't let off against CJ Stroud. I mean, there was not much. CJ Stroud was able to be very confident in the pocket for the most part throughout the season. And I think that just speaks volumes. I mean, part of CJ Stroud's big tape is because of Paris Johnson. Yep. I mean, very simple as that. His ability to guard that left side was huge, and I think he's going to be very good.
Yeah, another part of his game that I really like is the finisher mentality, and it's another thing that I really look for, personally, in an offensive lineman, finishing the play until the play is over, yep. And, you know, at the end of the day, putting a guy on the ground. is another thing that he does really well. So these last, you know, two plays that played, and we're going to replay them now. The first one against Georgia, where it's a run outside. He takes the guy nearly almost to the sideline and throws him down on the ground. And the running back is bouncing back to, you know, the right, going away from where Paris Johnson, you know, pulled and took that play with the outside stretch. But he's still pushing the guy to the sideline, takes him to the ground. And then the next play here against Michigan, same thing as well. Moves up to the second level. They're running right to the left on the outside zone. And he just, you know, pummels a guy into the ground. Finisher mentality as well is a lot to like for within an offensive lineman, especially a tackle as well.
Yeah, he's got the mentality to be the guy in an offensive line, and that's what you're drafting him for. You want that. He's got the size. He's got the potential. He's got the mentality. Now you just need to unlock everything and get everything together. And I think he's got the ability to do that. He's got the footwork. He's got good hand usage, but just he's not consistent enough in that.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to have to change. And I think just a few tweaks throughout the offseason to that with a good developmental offensive line coach, I think will be good enough to make him... I don't think he's going to be an all-pro out the gate. Not a pro bowler out the gate. But I think a year, 2 years from now, that's when we're going to start seeing, as he gets more comfortable with the position, as he gets more comfortable with the competition that he's facing, that's when we'll start to see the output that we really see that he could have.
So when I look at the draft board and where I can see Paris Johnson falling, 9, 10, and 11, I think is a sweet spot for Paris Johnson. I don't see him going before that. And quite frankly, I don't really see him going below that. So the Chicago Bears, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Tennessee Titans. Of those three teams, which one do you think is the best landing spot potentially for Paris Johnson? You know, in terms of the scheme that they run on their offense, how he fits within, you know, his mold in the NFL, and then the coaches he'd be working with. Which team do you like best out of those three?
Personally, I think the Eagles would probably be the best fit for him. I really like the offensive line there, and they've got a lot of veteran presence there to be able to help him and kind of get used to the position and stuff like that. I think that's the biggest thing for me. I think it's the rest of the offensive line unit that I think is going to help him the most. I think Tennessee Titans are in a very weird position as a franchise right now. Not really sure what their direction is or anything like that, and I wouldn't want to put a guy at the left tackle position right now that, you know, isn't probably going to be the guy right away. So I don't really like that fit. And then at 9 with the Bears, I think it's an interesting one. I think it could work. You know, you're going with another Ohio State quarterback, which I think could end up being an interesting fit. But no, I think the Eagles... Super Bowl appearance last year. They've got the veteran talent. They've got a good coaching staff. I think that would probably be the best fit for him.
Yeah, and he also wouldn't have to start right away either. Nope. I mean, he can sit behind Lane Johnson for what many think is just going to be one more year and then take over next year. So it's a very Eagles pick to go with a guy that can be a future long-term starter at a premium position despite having a starter there already. I like the Titans. I think he could be a good fit to that team and what they want to build on that offensive line of some of the young guys that they've been bringing in. You know, they let Taylor Lewan go at left tackle. It seems like it's a new era on that offensive line in Tennessee. So I think if Tennessee stays at 11, which is the key
to watch for
here within the next few weeks, but if Tennessee stays at 11, again, there's different avenues they can go with. You know, Jackson Smith and Jigba, you go if a quarterback falls, you know, maybe get a quarterback. But Paris Johnson, I think, would be the safest pick that they could probably make. But again, they're not really in a spot, like you said, with their franchise, where they're going to make a really safe pick. It seems like their, you know, new GM coming in might want to go with a bold pick.
Make a splash play,
and, you know, try to build his team the way he wants to. But he's another one that can consider, you know, Tennessee Titans as a landing spot. So now we'll switch over to Skoronski. And the big thing with Skoronski has been his arm length. Is this guy going to be a guard? Is this guy going to be a tackle? Where is he going to fit? But still a guy who's easily going to go within the top 15 picks, in my opinion, in this year's class.
I mean, I think Peter Skoronski has the most talent out of really any of these guys that we're going to talk about today, or at least potentially has the most talent out of all of these guys. And that question is going to hurt him a lot over these next 21 days as teams are finalizing their draft boards and all the teams that need offensive linemen, they're looking at it like, do we want to take the risk on this guy? Because he is going to struggle against longer-armed edge rushers if he's at the tackle position. But when you look at his tape, he was very good in college at the position.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of mind-boggling when you're looking at it, and you're like, he played so well, you watch the tape, and everything's so good, but you're just looking at the numbers, and it just doesn't make sense for him to play the position that he has played so well at so far.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I agree with you. I think he's a top 15 pick. Potentially could still be top 10. I mean, there's definitely an avenue where you see him go in the top 10 because a team sees what we all see with him, and they don't care about the arm length. And they're like, we'll try him out at offensive tackle. Doesn't work out, move him inside. Or, you know, we're just going to stick him inside, and he's going to be a starter right away.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got the potential to be a top 10 pick. Just depends on what the scouts and the general managers are seeing. Can they deal with the shorter arm length, and what are they going
to
do with it?
Yeah, and it's so interesting to me that Northwestern never tried him out anywhere else.
Yeah.
He only played left tackle through his 3 years at Northwestern. You know, didn't record a single snap according to PFF at left guard, right guard, anywhere. But so many people see him as a guard,
yep.
Which is so interesting to me. And the one thing with the arm length that I do want to talk about in terms of, you know, we haven't really seen a player with this arm length come in and be good at tackle.
Yep.
Not too long ago, Rashawn Slater had, let's see, arm length 33-inch arms. Peter Skronsky has 32 1/4. Not too big of a difference between the two, and Rashawn Slater has already been a very solid offensive tackle who was drafted very highly in the NFL draft by the LA Chargers. So it's not a too far-fetched conclusion, but to me, in my opinion, I see Skronsky more as an interior offensive lineman who can play tackle, as opposed to a tackle who can play in the interior. Even though he never did it in college, I see him more, I'm, you know, agreeing with everyone else, but I see him more as an interior guy who also, if he needs to, can play tackle. Kind of like an Elgton Jenkins.
Yeah.
Where he didn't come in as a tackle, he came in as an interior, but can also play that position on the outside. And Dane Brugler said it best on the Athletic show that actually came out today on Friday, talking about the offensive lineman. He sees Peter Skronsky as an all-pro guard or a middle-of-the-road offensive tackle.
I mean, all-pro guard. There's one guy that comes to mind, and that's Zach Martin.
Yeah.
I mean, the exact same height, the exact same arm length, 2 pounds heavy. Zach Martin's 2 pounds heavier. I mean, they're almost the exact same player, and we've seen how Zach Martin's career turned out. One of the best offensive guards we've seen in decades.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes so much sense for him to try to play that offensive guard position because, you know, yes, offensive tackle, you know, it's more of a premier position in the NFL. Everybody wants to be the left tackle, guard the quarterback's blind side. That's what you want to do. But if you want to be successful and be one of the best offensive linemen we've seen over the past 2-3 decades, sometimes you got to move. Sometimes you got to do what is best for your career. And honestly, Peter Skronsky, he just seems like more of a guard to me. And like you said, he'll play tackle occasionally, move around, but I think his primary position does need to change to guard.
All right, so let's pull up some of this left tackle film now from Northwestern that we saw out of Skronsky and try to figure out maybe if some of these plays would fit, you know, the mold better of what we want to see out of an offensive guard as well. So again, just not the best offense, but a lot of running and good run blocking out of Skronsky that I like to see, you know, especially once we get more toward our team fits later on. Some offenses that run the ball more, I like more as a fit for Skronsky and what they're trying to do with their offense because he's a really good run blocker, which pairs well to, you know, being a guard, you know, translates well to potentially being a guard and still being, you know, a good interior run blocker in the middle of your offensive line as a guard as well.
You know, I think he's got... that's the thing. I mean, his run blocking is extremely good. And we've seen that a lot. And I think that's going to be something that's also going to help him in the transition to the interior of the offensive line. And I think by going to a team that is more run-heavy is going to help him more. So we'll see if he can do that. But, I mean, his technique, very good.
Yeah.
Arguably the best in the class. So that's huge. He's got a very, very high floor, I think. And he's going to be a starter out the gate. Whatever team he goes to, I think he starts right away at whatever position they decide to go with. And I mean, he could be a Pro Bowler. He really could. If he goes into the right situation and he either plays tackle or moves to the guard position and adapts really well, I think he really could. He could be a Pro Bowler. He's got all the skill necessary. He's got the mentality to be able to play the position and make the switch if he needs to. He's a very good player.
Yeah, and so team fit-wise, this was like, you know, what I was alluding to with a run kind of first offense. The Chicago Bears at 9.
Yeah.
That's what I had in my mock draft. That's what still right now with the upcoming 3.0, I still have it there and I haven't moved him because I think he fits really well into, you know, again, I talked about they didn't do the best of job in free agency and bringing in offensive linemen. You know, Brian Poles and his crew in Chicago. And I think a guy who can play tackle, who can play guard, it fits well with what they built up for in free agency to where Skoronski's on the board at 9. They could really consider, you know, pulling the gun, you know, pulling the trigger on the gun and taking him there and working well within that, you know, kind of run first offense with Justin Fields and, you know, seeing how that offense, you know, elevates more as he figures out more and more of his game into next year.
There are two top 10 teams that I see him possibly going to. Bears are one, first, and the other one is Las Vegas Raiders. I think Las Vegas Raiders, if they don't go quarterback,
yeah,
I think it is very, very likely that they go offensive line. They've got a lot of holes on that offensive line. a lot of holes there. And with Josh Jacobs being there, they need someone to be able to step up. And versatile guy. I mean, a guy that can play multiple positions. So you can start him off at guard. If it doesn't work, move him to the tackle position. Start him off at tackle. If it doesn't work, move him to the guard position. Whatever way you want to do it. But they've got a position for him,
yeah,
no matter what it is. So, personally, I don't think offensive line is the move for them. But if they decide to go offensive line, I think Peter Skoronski is the perfect pick for them.
All right, we'll move on, Matt, and we'll talk about a guy now who has risen up the charts in the last week, especially the last week, out of Tennessee, and his tape was phenomenal. I mean, he had an incredible game that we're going to have footage from against Will Anderson, a speed-to-power edge rusher coming straight at his face, and then another tape that we have against B.J. Ojulari as well out of LSU, where he's more of a bendy, you know, try-to-get-around-you type of edge rusher, and he did very well against both of those guys, and Darnell Wright, I think, is flying up the board right now, and he's going to be, you know, a top 20 pick at this point, in my opinion, where at the time, I thought he was going to be in the late 20s. Now I see him easily going within the top 20 in the draft. And a lot of people, actually, surprisingly, I'm reading now, want to see him as a guard. Not a position that he's, you know, most well-known with. You know, at right tackle, I still think this is his best, you know, fit, and that's what he played at Tennessee. Didn't give up a single sack all season at right tackle. But 554 right tackle snaps in 2020. 920 left tackle snaps in 2021, and then 892 snaps back at right tackle in 2022. So it's really interesting to me that a lot of people want to see him, you know, test him out as a guard, but having him at tackle, and especially on the right side, is, I think, where Darnell Wright works best.
I agree. I think right tackle is the position for him just because we've seen him have so much success there. And he's great size. I could see the move. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I can see why. I mean, arm length still isn't great at 33 and 3/4 inches. So it's still a little bit on the shorter side, but it's still good. And I mean, I just don't see any reason why you'd want to move him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's shown that he took on arguably the best player in this draft, made him look silly for the most part. I mean, I just don't see why. I mean, Will Anderson is supposed to be one of the best edge prospects we've seen in years, and he shut him down easily. I just don't really see why you would want to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a big guy, 6'5", 333. He moves his weight well, though. I mean, I kind of see him as like a, hopefully better, DJ Fluker.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's a really good player, and he's, I mean, I see him as a starting right tackle in the league come this year. I just don't see any other way.
Yeah, and the other, I mean, he is so productive. Highly productive, and a top level. The SDC is a top level, especially for edge rushers, and being on the offensive line, did a right tackle, like I said, did a left tackle. The one thing maybe I can think about with him being a guard, I didn't think he was the best at longer pulls. You know, when they would do a zone run to the left and he would have to pull all the way from the right side, he couldn't really catch up and, you know, get ahead of the running back and help block in that scheme. So I think moving him at guard maybe helped out with the shorter pulls potentially. And then the second level, again, not the best climbing up to the second level, which is why I think he's more of a tackle, which I would love, you know, to talk about, you know, talk with someone more in the world and, you know, deeper into, you know, the scouting departments and, you know, insiders to figure out what is so appealing to him at guard. But it's so interesting to see how someone could try to, you know, use him in a different way that we haven't seen before at that level.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the great things about football is there's so many different variations that you can see. So many different people, and you're all looking at this. I mean, we're just talking about it. A guy that we thought earlier on is going to be a late 20s pick, potentially be a top 10 pick. I mean, some people saying offensive tackle, some people saying guard. There are just so many different ways that people kind of view these players, and that's really good, honestly. I mean, just having ideas, trying things out, trying to find out the best place for this player to be. And, you know, for all we know, guard is going to be the best place for him. He's going to go to a team. They're going to move him to the guard position. He's going to be an all-pro. Mm-hmm. We don't know. But, no, I think it'll be a very interesting process over the next few months once he's drafted. See what teams decide to do with him, personally. And I think you agree, right tackle is probably the position for him. But we're not paid to make decisions on where to play players right now.
Yeah.
We're here just talking about what we see and what we think. And we think it's a right tackle. If we end up being wrong, whatever. Props to whoever drafted him for that position. And, you know, we'll see how it goes.
So let's check out some of this tape.
Yep.
And the first one, again, a lot of these plays were one-on-one against Will Anderson, a perennial top player in this year's class. Top three player, expected top five easily in this year's class. And again, made him look absolutely silly. The stats from Will Anderson in this game, 3 tackles, 0 sacks, and a 68.3 PFF grade on that game. Darnell Wright completely shut him down. Again, one of the top prospects. I mean, I remember we were talking about Will Anderson years ago about being the top prospect in the class once he finally declares for the draft, immediately being a top prospect. Shut down by this guy was a sight to see, in my opinion. So we'll watch some of these plays. Just this one-on-one on the right side against Will Anderson for the most part. Just being a stout anchor for Hendon Hooker in this offense.
I mean, one thing that I just want to mention about Darnell Wright, he's a bulldozer. Yep. The man just kills people, especially in double teams. His ability to just drive people away is huge. So I think that's going to be one of his biggest skills. And, I mean, he's a finisher, man. He does what he needs to do, and that's what people are going to be drafting him for. Personally, we're talking about this, and we're saying right tackle or potentially guard. I don't think that's a top 10 level position. We're talking about positional value, running backs, how Bijan Robinson is one of the best prospects we've seen in a long time for his position, but the odds of him being a top 10 pick, even though he might be a top 10 level player, very, very low.
Yeah.
Right tackle, not necessarily the premium top 10 sexy level pick. So I think he's still going to be a top 20 pick. He'll be in there. But, I mean, he's got all the skill level in the world, could be a top 10 level talent. Does he get drafted in the top 10?
So the other thing, you know, with the guard transition that you talked about, how he was a finisher on double teams.
Yep.
And I talked about how he doesn't do well at long pulls, doesn't do well at climbing to the second level. But, I mean, honestly, I can see it now. Watching this tape and, you know, talking about it, if you put him at guard and you have a, you know, run inside up the middle, he can double team with a center or a tackle who is better at getting to the next level and maul the first guy on the line. Put him into the ground and have the next guy climb to the next level. I can see that work really well at, you know, an offensive guard with a team that, you know, does a lot of inside runs, a lot of early down runs, and I'm starting to buy into it potentially a little bit, a move. But now this next tape that we have is against LSU and BJ Ojulari. So again, I talked about with Will Anderson, a speed to power guy comes straight at your face. And now a different style of a pass rusher coming at him, who's again going to be a top second round pick in this year's class in Ojulari, a more bendy, agile, bendy type of edge rusher that he's faced against here. And this one, still being able to, you know, showcase his footwork, you know, get into a right spot against that type of a pass rusher, and still hold him in check against, in protection for Hendon Hooker as well. So there's just some couple plays there. Against Ojulari, but a lot to like about Darnell Wright. I think it's easy to see why he's starting to jump up the board here in this last week.
Yeah, and I think the reason why he's jumped up board so much is as you watch his tape from his freshman year on, there's so much maturity. mm-hmm. as you go along. You see him get a little more calmer in presence. His feet are a little calmer. He becomes more confident in his ability. And I think having great games against BJ Ojulari, Will Anderson, seeing that he can do what top picks can do has given him a little more confidence, and he's been able to really use that to his advantage, show it in his game, show it in his film. Doesn't really need to focus on his technique as much. Can just kind of let it happen because he knows he can do it, and then just drive people away.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to be a special player. I think he could. Top 20 pick. I think there's a lot of teams that would be interested in drafting him, especially as some of these other guys go away. I'm excited to see where he goes and where they use him.
Yeah, so to me, I think about teams, and he has a wide range.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think he could be a top 20 pick. I still think he could be a mid to late 20s pick. I think he has a very wide range in terms of where he potentially could go once we get to draft time. But three teams that I've liked, and I played around with it, one team in the teens, two teams in the mid to late 20s. The team in the teens is your New York Jets. And that's where I currently have them slated at right now, at 13 to the Jets, if they hold on to that spot. And then the other two teams as well, late in the late 20s, the Buffalo Bills and the Cincinnati Bengals. All three of those teams, what they have in common and where I see Darnell Wright fitting best is, you know, if he's at the right tackle position, and if that's where they draft him to be at, is in a play-action, pass-heavy offense. And those three teams, I think, you know, when Rodgers eventually goes to the Jets, we're going to see that style of offense with those three teams, and I think he can be a good fit within those offenses.
Yeah. I think there's two other teams that we got to mention when it comes to this. One of them might be a little bit of a surprise. The first team is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yep.
I think that's a very interesting pick. They could use some help on the at the tackle position. They could also use some interior help. And, you know, if they decide to move him to the guard position, I think that would be a very interesting pick there to have him move there. The other team, a little bit more of a surprise, we talked about them earlier, the Tennessee Titans. I think that's more of a reach pick for them, but if they go with the offensive line position, they get a very versatile player.
Yeah.
They get a guy that can play both tackle and guard potentially, and I think out of all the guys we've talked about, lowest floor, highest ceiling of the three guys that we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be a very interesting pick. You kind of, again, not a splashy pick that we might be expecting now out of the Tennessee Titans, but if you're talking about going offensive line, arguably might be the best pick for them of the three guys that we've talked about. Maybe the least amount of question marks as well.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see, but I think that's kind of like a surprise pick. If we were to go closer to the top 10, that might be a team that ends up going for them.
So let's continue on talking about these tackles in this year's class. And the next one that we have up on the agenda is going to be Broderick Jones out of Georgia. And Broderick, he is going to be, your straight up offensive tackle guy. Don't really see much versatility out of him. Pretty much was a 1 year starter at the position, which was this year at Georgia. But some teams, according to Dane Bugler, have him as the offensive tackle one. And the big thing for him has been the athleticism. At his size, a unreal athlete, reportedly hit 19 miles an hour at his size. I mean, 6'4", 310, I have him down at. And the athleticism was very evident on the field. And this guy easily could be a multi-year starting offensive tackle. And one that not a lot of people are, talking about right now. And I can see him start to fall potentially, listening to all the tea leaves and, insider, news droppings here and there that they're leaving for everyone to scoop up on. Not a lot of Broderick Jones that people are talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think this comes back to our conversation earlier about kind of the quality of the draft class and how at the beginning, there were the guys. Broderick Jones, Peter Skoronski, Paris Johnson. And then pretty much nothing else. Now we're seeing all these other guys come up in here and really show themselves out. And it's kind of pushed some of these guys back. And Broderick Jones has taken the hit. He's taken the biggest hit of the other three guys. And personally, I never saw him as the offensive line one. I didn't see it. I think he's still a very good player and has the potential to be a very good offensive tackle. But, I mean, again, not as much experience as a starting left tackle. I mean, he gives up a lot of ground when it comes to power rushing. He's got good strength, and he should be good footwork as well. It's just overall, when I'm thinking, all right, we've got a top 15 pick, and these guys are all available, Broderick Jones definitely isn't the first guy that comes to mind.
Yeah, and you know the experience definitely hurts him. 19 starts at the tackle position in his entire career at Georgia, which isn't the best in what you want to think about and what you want to consider. So definitely raw in terms of experience, but I think the talent is there.
Oh yeah.
I mean, this guy has one of the best hand strengths and is an absolute latch when he gets onto a line, a defensive lineman coming right at him. When he latches onto him with his hands and with his grip, the play's pretty much over for that defensive lineman. So that, I think, is a lot to like about him. Just the physicality in him, the finishing nature again with him and the way he blocks in his game. And I think there's a lot of potential and a lot of upside where teams, might, be enticed by that. And again, like Dane Bugler said, some teams have him as a top, offensive lineman on their board, where it's definitely, understandable to see why.
I think there's a player comp for him that not only is a comparison of the type of player he is, but also the progression of what his career could be. And that's Andrew Thomas. I think very similar types of players, and also Andrew Thomas did not have the best start to his career. It took him a little while to get used to the level of the NFL, and I think it's going to be the same for Broderick Jones. I mean, Broderick Jones, we've mentioned this, not a lot of starts. Didn't happen. He just couldn't get used to the NFL level, and now he had a great season for the Giants, Andrew Thomas. And I think Broderick Jones is going to take some time. He's going to have to get used to it. He's going to get lashed a lot, especially by fans, depending on what team he goes to, if he does get the start right away. But I think overall he will end up being a very good offensive tackle player in the NFL. It's just going to take him time. I think a good place for him would be a team that has a veteran tackle at the position already. And whether it's just a veteran teacher where, he's still going to start, but he's going to have someone to kind of coach him through everything. Or it's going to be the Eagles, for example. Lane Johnson starting. Him coming in kind of as a backup, and after Lane Johnson retires, he comes in and takes the position. So very similar thing like that, where I think he's not going to make an impact right away. And if he does start right away, he's going to struggle. But eventually he'll get his feet wet, and he'll come to his own.
All right, let's get to some tape on Broderick Jones and showcase, some of the ferocious nature that I was talking about at Georgia, and what he was able to do with, a good offense this year, and, just overall good protection against some of these top teams as well. So, again, a lot to like. Again, the grip strength, to me, was phenomenal and outstanding in this game. When he was on a defender, he didn't really get off the defender until the rep was over, which I thought was good, but he's not a guy where he's going to punish a guy and then go find another guy. Move up to the next level and take out multiple guys in one play. He's a more latch and stay on him type of guy, which works really well for a pass heavy offense, where he's just going to stay there and be an anchor on one top edge rusher in the class, on an opposing team.
Yeah. I think the big thing for me is he's in the developmental phase of his career.
Yeah.
His technique is not there, completely there. He's just not a finished product, but he has all of the athletic and physical gifts that you need in an NFL quality starting offensive tackle. Now you just need to unlock it. You need to be patient. You need to know what you're getting with him. So if you're a top 10 team, just say it's the Eagles for now. The Eagles at the number 10 pick, you draft Broderick Jones, you need to know, all right, he's not starting day one. Or if he does start day one, you got to be sure that you may need a little help with him. Give a little more max protect, maybe. Just have the guard stay back. Maybe the running back is going to stay as more of a extra blocker on some plays, just give him a little more protection. But I think he, as I mentioned, got the potential to be a very, very good offensive tackle. Could potentially be the best one that comes out of the class. I think the guys that we've talked about, and Broderick Jones so far, are the guys that we see as the potential number one in 2-3 years' time.
Yeah.
But he's just going to take a little more time than some of these other guys.
Yeah, and for me, he seems like a guy that's going to be in your mid-20s. Mid-20s type pick. In this year's class. So next up, Matt, we're going to go with an Oklahoma guy, and Anton Harrison, another tackle in this year's class, and another guy who is going to be your tackle. Your straight-up left tackle, 803 snaps at left tackle in 2022, 671 left tackle snaps in 2021, and really didn't see much outside of that position. But still, he has the appealing offensive tackle Physical profile: long build, athletic build, great arm length, decent athleticism, you know, to handle the speed off the edge, and has a wide range as a run blocker as well, which compared to these other top prospects, I think he's a lot stronger at in that regard as a run blocker.
Yeah, I think Anton Harrison is one of the more underrated prospects in this class, and personally, I think he's going to end up being an early second round pick,
mm-hmm.
But it's going to be a great value pick there. He's got the athleticism, he's got the size, as you mentioned. Few things, he doesn't really get a good initial knock on his rushers. He can't really push them back initially, and when he gets beaten, he struggles to recover. Those are the two things that I see mostly when I've watched his film. But overall, he's got everything you need as an offensive tackle to be an NFL quality starter. It's just, is he a first round talent? Personally, I don't think so. Could he squeeze in based on the amount of offensive tackles that are picked at a certain time? Yes, no question. I think teams are going to be happy if they get him. It's just, I think he's more of an early second round evaluation.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, again, the things he needs to work on, in my eyes, is the strength. I thought he's a good physical profile from an athletic standpoint as a left tackle, but I think as an NFL left tackle, you're going to need some more strength if you're going to be on an island with some of these top, you know, pass rushers, and also, you know, the initial leverage, like you talked about. So, you know, I see very similarly with the cons of Anton Harrison, and we'll pull up the film now to see, you know, maybe some of that in action in terms of what he was able to, you know, able to do. So again, you know, losing some leverage there on some defensive rushers in this first game against Iowa State, and, you know, even some film later in here against another top, you know, prospect in this year's class, you know, Will McDonald. I was trying to find a good, you know, one-on-one battles with this offensive line film, and I was putting this together to see, you know, against competition that's going to look more similarly to NFL type competition that he's going to be facing against, and pretty concerning a little bit. These, you know, these issues we're talking about were evident in college. They're probably going to be more evident in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is he's going to be a liability when it comes to a speed to power rush. I think that's the big thing, and when that happens, there are a lot of NFL edge rushers, a lot of the best NFL edge rushers that use that technique of speed to rush, speed to power.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's my biggest concern with him and why I wouldn't waste a first round pick on him, personally. I still think he's a very good player, and I think he can develop. Is he going to remain as a starting NFL left tackle? I honestly don't know. You may have to move him to the right tackle. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens at some point, if he can't just develop enough or adapt to the NFL level. Because we've seen he wasn't able to adapt to it at the college level. It's a huge jump to the NFL. So if he wasn't able to do it in college, what makes you think he can do it in the NFL? That's the big question. If he can, great. And he's going to be a starting left tackle in the NFL for a long time. Mm-hmm. A comparison for me is Deion Dawkins. I think that's a very interesting comparison there. I just don't know. I'm just not settled with him.
Yeah.
That's the big thing.
And if I were to see him be potentially a first-round pick, the only team I really would have him locked for right now would be the Pittsburgh Steelers, because I think with his athleticism and his athletic upside compared to his strength as a deficit, I think it works well with the offensive, you know, the Steelers are wanting to run, where you get him out of space, blocking for Najee Harris on the outside. You know, they like to do a lot of outside, you know, left runs as well with Najee, and also moving him up the middle. So some of those highlights we saw where he was able to get out in space, he worked very effectively as a blocker in the run game. It's just working on some of these more technical standpoints as a pass protector. The, you know, the leverage, the, you know, initial dealing with the pass rusher and getting his hands on him, and then the strength to, you know, withhold some of these top tier guys as a pass rusher in the NFL are some of the things he needs to work on and prove to teams if he wants to be a first round pick.
Yeah, and I mean, that's going to be the big thing. I mean, he needs to be able to prove himself. And if you need to prove yourself, you're not a first-round pick to me. Simple as that.
All right. Well, Matt, next up we got, we're going to go back to the Ohio State film.
Yep.
Because we're going to talk about another tackle from Ohio State on the right side in DeJuan Jones. Another one who seems to be a stereotypical tackle, but one who had more experience on the right side. 790 snaps in 2021, went down a little bit, 763 snaps at right tackle, still at right tackle in 2022. But it seemed like in 2022 he finally found who he was as a, you know, as a pass blocker, as an offensive line. Dave Bugel said it best on the offensive line show for The Athletic that it seemed like he wanted to be a basketball player playing football. And in 2022, he finally found it within himself that he's a football player and played like it.
Yep.
So a lot better film than I saw as well in 2022 this year. But ultra rare size. I mean, an almost 90-inch wingspan on this guy. A mountain of a human being. That is the real upside with DeJuan Jones, is his size. He's a huge dude.
Man, 6'8", 374.
Incredible.
I mean, personally, I think he's a first-round talent. I think he's going to go in the later first round, somewhere between 26 and 31.
Yep.
If he slips into the second round, that's my ideal Jets pick. I want the Jets trading up from 42, 43, whichever one they end up keeping, and getting into that, like, 32 to 35 range, mm-hmm. somewhere in there, and going and drafting him. He is the ideal person that I would want if he slips into the second round. I think he could easily be the first man off the board in the second round if he gets there.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, ultra rare size. He's very athletic, big wingspan. I mean, he did have some issues with penalties. I saw that a lot, and I think that's something that you can kind of teach at the next level. That's something where you can kind of teach him a little more discipline
mm-hmm.
and figure that out. But overall, I mean, he's a mountain of a human being. I mean, that's the biggest thing, and that's what you're drafting him for. You're drafting for his massive size. And, I mean, he's a great player.
Yeah, he's an absolute mauler in the run game as
well. Oh, yeah.
And powerful, massive blocker, uses his length very effectively. I mean, not only is it an upside that he has it, but also that he has it at such, or uses it at such a high level with, you know, again, an almost 90-inch wingspan. But with the size comes some, you know, concerns, being a little too top-heavy. You know, maybe could drop a little bit of that weight to have a more balanced frame and, you know, strengthen his balance a little more. But again, doesn't have the upside to offer as a multi-positional guy compared to these other ones. But a team who wants a right tackle and wants a guy who is going to be very stout and very effective as a pass blocker, as a run blocker, who did a great job this year redefining his technique. I could, you know, also see him being a late first round guy and a quick pick in the second round if he falls into day two, like you said.
Yeah. I think the big thing with DeJuan Jones is his size.
Mm-hmm.
And for both positives and negatives.
Yeah.
Functional movement. That's the big thing when it comes to giant human beings. And we saw that with Mekhi Becton when he was drafted by the Jets. He's cut 50 pounds this offseason, I believe. I think it was 50, if I remember correctly. We're going to see if it helps. I mean, he's had a lot of injury issues. He struggled a little bit at the beginning part of his career. Now that he's cut the weight and he's become more of a compact, he's still got the big size and he's got the strength, but he's a little more compact. That might help him a little more, not only be more effective on the field, but stay on the field.
Yeah.
And one thing that I've noticed is DeJuan Jones, he's been able to do that. He's been able to stay on the field. He's been able to move. Question is, how long can he do that for? So I think it's going to be a question a lot of NFL teams ask, and why he might slip to the second round is, at this massive size, as big of a plus as it is to have on the offensive line, how long can he do it? Can he keep it up? And will he be able to just move at the NFL pace that you need to be on the offensive line?
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be the biggest question and the difference between him being the 25th pick in the NFL draft and him being the 35th pick in the NFL draft.
Yep, very good points. So we'll pull up the film now against, again, the Georgia defense we'll start with, and then move on from there. The other thing, I think, comes with the size as well. I think he leaves his feet behind quite often, which, again, you know, doesn't really bode well with him for the balance, but that just comes with the size. So also not being able to be reactive and as an athleticism to keep pace if he's getting out in space, or if he has a speed rusher, you know, barreling hard off, you know, his side, you know, off the edge and on his side, his feet kind of lag behind trying to get to that guy. But when he's on a guy, he can straight blow past him, and he has the size advantage to hold up over pretty much any player on a defensive line if he comes in contact with him.
Yeah, I think one of the big things that he needs to work on is creating leverage, and
mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things where he's not able to get his hands up and push up on these defenders, and I think that's going to be something that. One of the first things they're going to work on when he gets into training camp this year is creating that leverage. Because if you can do that, that's going to help a lot with a lot of those quick guys. If you can get that leverage early on, it's going to be a lot more difficult for them to speed past you, and it's going to help him a lot and make him a much more valuable player. But other than that, I think if he can keep his movement, if he can be that kind of guy, he'll be fine, and he'll be a top guy in the NFL. I mean, he'll be a very, very valuable right tackle in the NFL if he can stay healthy, stay on the field, limit the penalties, and just be able to consistently move at the at that level.
All right, so last one we're going to hit on really quick, that this guy is more of an interior offensive lineman from Florida who we see saw a lot early in the process, sneaking in to first-round mock drafts. In my opinion, more of a second-round guy, but Osiris Torrence. Overall, good mass, 6'5", 330, and proven traits that are easily translatable to being a guard at the next level. Played pretty much right guard exclusively, only 46 snaps at right tackle in 2021. In 2022, only played at right guard, and traditionally, guards aren't normally top-end picks, especially if you're a guard exclusively, but if the hole is there and you need a guard in your offense, I think he'd be a good day-two pick that you would want to take a swing on in the second round.
I think the big thing that's hurt Osiris Torrence this year is Peter Skoronski and Darnell Wright.
Yeah.
Everybody talking about them potentially moving to the guard position and them being so successful at the tackle position in college, I think that has given them a huge jump up, because you're drafting these guys, potentially, most of the people that are going to be drafting those two guys, they're most likely drafting them as guards, potentially as guards. So Osiris ends up becoming the interior number three in this class. And I think that's going to hurt him a lot, because we usually see one, maybe two interior guys that go in the first round. Again, not the sexy pick that you get, not the big valuable pick that you want in a first round draft pick. So is he going to be a top 40 pick? Probably. I mean, he'll go early in the second round if he goes in there.
Yeah.
But having those two guys, and also a guy that I'm going to bring up later as potentially an interior guy that can go in the first round, John Michael Schmitz, I think it's really going to hurt his case to be a first round talent.
Yeah. So let's see some of this tape, and what I do like out of Osiris Torrence, I think he's a pretty efficient run blocker at the guard. Like this first play we see against Georgia, moving up to that second level, getting, pushing people out of the way, creating lanes in the middle of the offensive line in the run game has been efficient as well. And this is where we see a lot of the good head-to-head battle against Jalen Carter.
He held his own
against Jalen Carter. And again, Jalen Carter is one of the guys in this class who is the potential top prospect on the field in this year's class that we're going to be talking about, later next week once we get to our defensive line series. But he held his own against them, in this game. Florida against Georgia didn't go well for Florida, but offensive line tape-wise, Osiris had a pretty good game against, a top player on a top defense.
I mean, here's the thing. So Osiris, he struggles against athletic rushers. I think that's his big thing. But one of the things I really like about him, penalty-free in 2022. And he went up against some quality rushers, Jalen Carter being one of them, arguably the top prospect in this class. And, not only was he able to hold his own, but he didn't really have to use penalties to kind of hold him back. He was able to keep him in front of him he's a good player. He really is. And he's got the first round level talent. It's just, is he going to be worth the first round pick? Are there people that are better suited to be first round picks than him because of his inability to really play on the outside?
Mm-hmm.
He's an interior guy, said it that. Most likely not going to be able to play center. He's just going to be a guard. He's going to be available in the second round. How many teams are going to be looking for Osiris Torrence, do you think, in the first round? Not many.
Yeah, especially on the back end, you're thinking of a lot of pass-heavy attacks with these playoff teams. I think he fits really well as being a run-blocking right guard.
Yep. At the next level. It just screams second round to me. Screams early second round, which to him is going to be disappointing because he sees himself most likely as a first round guy, and I think most people do. It's just people aren't going to be looking for him as a first round guy. I think the biggest chance he has is the Steelers, but they're so high up that it just doesn't make sense for him to be drafted there. First round skill, second round value. That's the big thing.
All right, so Matt, to wrap it up today, we're going to talk about some of the other guys. And I want to do a quick make your case for these guys in particular. We're going to do two each because I have two that I really like that I think are two that you might have differently than me. So, because there's a lot of guys in here, especially once we get into day two, they're still really good caliber offensive linemen. So we're going to do a quick make your case, and I'm going to give you the floor to kick it off.
All right, so the first guy, John Michael Schmitz. Really like him. I think he's the best center in this class and got great size, great ability to hold it up. I mean, personally, he's my Jets second round pick because obviously I said DeJuan Jones the ideal second round pick, but the most realistic one, John Michael Schmitz. And I think he can be a pro level, all pro center in the NFL. And we haven't seen that kind of quality, at least the Jets wouldn't have, since Nick Mangold, one of the best centers in NFL history, arguably the best center in Jets history. So I think we haven't really had that guy in the center of our offensive line in a long time, and I think John Michael Schmitz could be that guy. And the second one that I want to talk about, surprisingly, another interior guy, Luke Weipler out of Ohio State.
Yeah.
The third Ohio State offensive lineman that we're talking about here. I think he's very underrated. I think he's kind of overshadowed by the two other guys that we talked about so far, Paris Johnson and Skrzydlewski. And but no, I think he's only allowed 3 QB hurries and 286 pass blocking attempts. That's pretty good.
Pretty good.
So I think both of the guys, second round talents, but JMS potentially squeaking into the first round. Depending on some things, most likely not, but I think he could, but definitely early second round talents.
Yep. All right, so my first player and a guy who I've been absolutely, you know, hammering the table for to be a first round guy, and I don't know how he's not. I don't know how he's not in any discussions, is Steve Avila out of TCU. Guy played 1,000 snaps at left guard in 2022, but beyond that, I mean, beyond the on-the-field, you know, reliability, playing over 1,000 snaps for TCU this year, one of the most versatile guys in this year's class. 2021, he had 685 snaps at center. In 2020, he had 371 snaps at center. And then in 2020, 113 snaps at right tackle. A guy who can play anywhere on the offensive line, 4 to 5 positions, easily I can see him translate to in the NFL. And he had great film against Georgia. Big game, you know, TCU, Georgia, where it wasn't, you know, a 65-7 loss for TCU, but still. Steve Avila was competing with Jalen Carter at guard until the clock hit zero. The entire game. And a beast of an athlete. You know, Dane Buechler actually hit on him today on the podcast again that I'll, try to plug here a little bit because this was just a great episode of those guys breaking down these offensive linemen. But Steve Avila is a guy that a lot of people are sleeping on. And, you know, Dane Buechler brought up that the Dallas Cowboys are high on him. I would love to see them swing on him in the first round and be a first-round guy because, in my eyes, easy first-round talent that he showcased at TCU. And my second one, I have to give love to my smaller schools, especially at the FCS level. I'm going to go with Cody Mock out of NDSU. Yep. Another versatile guy, 844 snaps at left tackle this year, 885 last year, 428 in 2020, 13 total snaps at guard, but a guy who has easily the ability to play guard or center at the next level or even tackle. So another multi-positional guy that I really like in this year's class in terms of where you want to put him. A former tight end, easily became the best left tackle at the FCS level this year, and also a six-year senior. Tons of experience to be a plug-and-play guy. And I do also want to shout out a good combine performance as well from Blake Freeland that will pull up from BYU. 9.83 relative athletic score. Another insane athlete who is going to be available potentially toward the end of day two. That could be a good tactic pickup late in there. And there's a lot of late guys that are offensive linemen this year. You see more and more of them every single week starting to create a buzz in this year's draft class.
There's a bunch of quality in this position, a lot of depth. I mean, Matthew Bergeron of Syracuse.
Yeah.
You've got Andrew Voorhees of USC. I mean, Cooper Beebe of Kansas State. I mean, there's a lot of guys here that we're going to talk about throughout this process of the next 13 days. It's exciting. One of the most fun positions to scout and just kind of see how everything progresses from the end of the college football season until draft night, even past draft night, as we're going to see some of these guys that, you know, are tackles, could become guards, stuff like that. It's such an exciting position to kind of watch.
Yeah, and Joe Tippmann, another one out of Wisconsin, another, you know, versatile guy in the interior as well. But a pleasure, Matt, breaking down these guys. Again, I love it too. I mean, every team in the NFL, 32 teams, need 5 offensive linemen.
Yep.
So there's always going to be a lot of these guys.
A lot of openings.
A lot of these guys coming into the league and the draft. So it was a lot of fun breaking down these guys. I enjoyed it. So appreciate it, Matt.
Of course.
We'll see you back in studio on Monday. We're going to be breaking down the edge rushers in this year's class. And again, a position where there's going to be a lot of guys going in the top 31 selections. And finally get to some Will Anderson talk. The perennial top talent in this year's class. And then once we get into later next week, we'll do the interior of the defensive line. And then we will do the defensive backs leading up to draft week. The start of draft week closer to the NFL draft. So defense starting on Monday with the edge rushers. 9 a.m. in studio on YouTube and on the radio at WSOE 89.3 in Elon in Burlington. But that is all the time we have today breaking down these offensive linemen. You can find all the videos on our YouTube channel at The Slaw Sports Show. If you miss any part of today's episode, it will be there as well on the podcast. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, anywhere you get a podcast, you'll find us. So until next time, peace.